Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, as I was saying, the show is coming to you all the way from Cape Town in South Africa as part of this year's EY Entrepreneur of the Year CEO Retreat. On the first day of our time here, I had the pleasure of meeting the Mayor of Cape Town, Jordan Hill Lewis, of the Democratic Alliance, where together we discussed just what Cape Town has to offer. Have a listen to this. Now, am I right in saying that you're the youngest ever Cape Town mayor? You got the title in 2021 when you were 33 years of age. Would that be right? Something around that.
That is, I'm certainly the youngest in the democratic dispensation of our country, but in fact, somewhere in the very early 1800s, there was a mayor just a couple of months younger than me, yeah.
All right. And you're also very active. You're a member of Parliament. You're one of the youngest MPs. You've held portfolios in trade and industry, also shadow finance minister. So you know how this city ticks. What is it about Cape Town that offers so much optimism and so much opportunity?
Cape Town is obviously a remarkable city, quite unique in the world for its incredible natural beauty. But it offers so much more than that as well. It has this incredible global brand. It has these three wonderful globally respected universities that churn out thousands of very high quality graduates. It's increasingly the kind of home address for tech investment on the African continent, far outstripping Nairobi and Lagos and Johannesburg. So it has all of these really cool but really booming niche sectors that are kind of coming together in Cape Town and agglomerating in Cape Town that makes it a very exciting economy as well. It's not just about tourism and hospitality economy. It is absolutely about all of these future industries as well.
Okay, and it's also got a lovely climate.
Yeah.
It enjoys tourists, so there's a kind of a vibrancy about it, which is very refreshing.
Yeah. It's also extremely cost effective to visit, especially for Irish guests. So come on, book your ticket.
I suppose, like many cities, Mayor, the blight of homelessness, of poverty, is always to be seen, and Cape Town is no different. Is the government proactively trying to solve that, or what are you doing as government in terms of trying to make the quality of life better for everybody?
Cape Town still, you know, suffers from the poverty that South Africa suffers from. We have a lot of poverty in South Africa. We still have very high unemployment, 35% unemployment in South Africa. And so that is by far and away our biggest social challenge. And that is why we obsess so much about growing the local economy here, because that's the only way to get people out of poverty sustainably over time, is to get them into work. And so you've got to grow the economy constantly. And that's going reasonably well for us here. The economy is growing very nicely in Cape Town, and more jobs are being created. And then you've got to deal with the day-to-day pressures of poverty. And so we are trying to build accommodation, affordable accommodation, and even free accommodation as quickly as we can. Here in Cape Town, just over the last 2 years, we've put about $250 million into free accommodation for homeless people. So constantly trying to alleviate the immediate effects of poverty while also trying to grow the economy, because that, again, is the only long-term way to get sure. to solve poverty.
And you mentioned an initiative that you've taken on about being self-sufficient around your own electricity, because I understand power cuts can be a problem.
Yes.
At times over the year. So what are you doing there, and what have you done that makes Cape Town different to other cities in South Africa from a power resource point of view?
Well, when we started, we simply said we refuse to accept that if the national grid is unable to provide us the power that we need, that we can't go and buy it elsewhere. Previously, that was not legal in South Africa. We still had this old-fashioned, monolithic, centralized utility model where everyone had to buy power from the state utility. But the state utility couldn't provide the power even if you wanted to buy it at certain times of the day. And so we just said we're going to go and buy it on the private sector. We're going to go and get what we call IPPs, independent power producers, to go and invest, build solar farms, build wind farms, whatever the case is, and supply to our city. Since we did that, and I think partly because we did that, The regulation of the electricity sector in South Africa has rapidly changed, and it is now legal to go and buy power from independent sources. And so we are just trying to do that as fast as we can to get to that point where we don't have to rely on the national grid anymore and can say goodbye to any power cuts of any sort.
Finally, can I ask you about the elections that are happening next week? Mm. It's a big day for South Africa. I'm told that the polls are saying that the ANC may not get a majority. What are the implications of that going to be?
So just that statement alone has huge implications, because the ANC has governed without any serious contest for the last 30 years. And really, the fact that this huge party with all of this enormous weight of history behind it is going to lose its majority, very likely to lose its majority next week, is a massive development in the maturing of our democracy. It's very important in a democracy that no party has a automatic claim to power, that you have to actually win your votes every time. And so I think that is very healthy for our country. It may come also with a period of instability as we try for the first time to set up a coalition government. Most European countries are much more familiar with the difficulty of setting up coalition governments than we are. This is a new concept for South Africa. But we'll get through it. We'll figure out how to form a productive and constructive new government. And I think we'll be much better off for it because of that maturing of our democracy, which is so important.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your hospitality, Mayor Jordan Hill-Lewis. Pleasure to meet you, and thanks for the very warm welcome to your beautiful city.
Absolute pleasure, and great to meet you.
You're listening to Down to Business here on News Talk, bringing you the sights and sounds of this year's EY Entrepreneur of the Year CEO Retreat. There's a really interesting political dimension happening next week. I think it's next Wednesday. The people of South Africa are going to the polls. The ANC have been in power for 30-odd years. There's huge talk that they're probably going to lose their majority, which could be significant. And I'm going to talk to a man now who understands the political scenario out here like no one else. He's Professor Richard Calland. He's a constitutional lawyer, and he's a political analyst. He's an Englishman, but he's lived here for 30 years, and he knows the political system here inside out. So, Richard, if you would, maybe at a high level, tell us what's happening next week and tell us what you think might be the outcomes.
Well, I think even younger people remember what I call the first transition, the transition to democracy 30 years ago, 94, Mandela, the Rainbow Nation. Everybody's eyes on South Africa. It was a magical moment, of course. Yeah. The long queues, people had fought for democracy, given their life for democracy. Here we are 30 years later, what I call the second transition, because we're transitioning out of 30 years of electoral domination by the African National Congress, Mandela's party. The ANC's changed a lot, the country's changed a lot, perhaps not enough. And now it's time, perhaps, for change. And of course, the people of South Africa will decide that next week. What we have is uncertainty for the first time, because for six elections, I could have told you exactly who was going to win, who was going to be the next president. This time I can't.
Okay. So there are a couple of interesting scenarios at play. So firstly, South Africa aren't used to doing coalitions. As you said, single party. There are some outriders. Jacob Zuma being one, who I believe was in power for 9 years. But I think you described him earlier as South Africa's version of Donald Trump, as in he has been indicted on some level of criminal activity. He's been told that legally he can't stand for election, but he could get as much as 3% of the vote, which could be a game changer.
Yes, only today our Constitutional Court has ruled that Jacob Zuma, our former president, is not eligible to be a member of parliament because he was convicted of an offence and sentenced to more than 12 months imprisonment. That was 3 years ago. Despite that, and despite his, to say the least, checkered record as president for 9 years, what we know now as the state capture years, because he allowed a systemic form of corruption to gain root in this country, causing great harm to our institutions and to our economy, but the rule of law held. and the rule of law continues to hold. Our constitution is more than a piece of paper. So in many ways, Mr. Zuma is fighting against the grain of our democracy. But in some parts of the country, he's popular, and he could win, yes, 2 or 3% of the vote. Now, in a close election, as you will know well, as people of Ireland will know well, and Europe, in a close election where coalition cards have to fall on the table, a party with 2 or 3% could end up as some kind of kingmaker. Yeah. And he's now the proverbial spanner in the works.
Okay. So in terms of the ANC not getting the majority, the likes of Jacob Zuma being a potential kingmaker, is there any fears of political instability?
Unfortunately, yes, because Mr. Zuma's followers are, and his sort of loyal lieutenants, are more or less the same people that surrounded him and agitated after he was imprisoned back in 2001, July. He was incarcerated for that 12-month sentence, and within days there was a rebellion, there was an uprising, and violence took hold of KwaZulu-Natal, his home province, spread into Johannesburg, and billions of dollars of worth of damage and harm was done to the economy, and more than 300 people lost their lives in those, wow, in those days that followed. So it's kind of the same people behind Zuma now as were behind that rebellion, same WhatsApp group, and so we are concerned, yes.
Finally, can I ask you, Richard, about, I suppose, the disaffected, the people who may not vote. So unemployment, youth unemployment, is in the early 30s in terms of percentage. There's a big percentage of the young people that are disaffected and may not register. Surely this could have a huge implication on the final standing on Judgment Day.
Yes, the question has to be asked, what legitimacy will the new government have if, let's say, the main party has 45% of the vote of 70% that come out to vote, and that 70% is 70% of a much bigger number of people who are eligible to vote. So the point is, a third of eligible voters chose not to register for this election. They turned their back on democracy after 30 years. We're not sure why, but we sense that it's, for young people at least, it's a hopelessness around unemployment and, wow, and job opportunity. But that's a worry for our democracy.
Okay. Well, look, we'll watch it closely. It's great to be up close to it here. Thank you for your acute political analysis. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Bobby. It's a pleasure.
Cheers.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.